It's not easy to swim at Whitstable Beach. At low tide, the sea retreats so far that it almost vanishes, and the water is barely deep enough to cover your ankles. Locals joke that you could paddle all the way to the Isle of Sheppey. I have no idea whether that's actually true, but I do know that you'd have to wade through an awful lot of mud to find out. Not that there's anything wrong with low tide. All kinds of strange and beautiful things are waiting to be found on the seabed. But if you want to swim, then you'll have to wait for high tide, when the sea rises halfway up the beach and is suddenly deep and tantalizing. This only happens twice in 24 hours. Miss it by an hour and you'll find your knees brushing along the bottom as you attempt a front crawl. No, to swim at Whitstable, properly swim, without your feet touching the ground, you'll need a tide table and a military sense of punctuality. And probably a pair of swimming shoes, because the shingle beach is a killer on bare feet. Even then, if you time your swim to perfection, you'll find muddy brown channel water rather than the clear, sparkling waves of the Atlantic. However, if you're willing to brave all of these things, the tides, the shingle, the looming suspicion of uncleanliness, you'll find that the Whitstable Sea has its rewards. It's never as cold as the Atlantic, and nor does it have those crashing waves that can suddenly overwhelm you, leaving you spluttering and spitting out seaweed. By midsummer, it's as warm and smooth as bathwater, and you're never far from a cup of tea or a glass of wine when you're done. There's a lifeboat station just around the corner, which is a comfort. But best of all, you'll come out of the water with the distinct sense that you found a secret passageway through life, one that leaves you feeling renewed and restored. It may take a certain kind of person to appreciate the charms of Whitstable Beach, but for those discerning souls, it's almost perfect. So when Deb spotted Maisie swimming at West Beach every day for 2 weeks straight, she knew they had to be kindred spirits. Granted, this other woman was properly kitted out in a full-length wetsuit, booties, goggles, and a neon-orange swimming hat, which seemed a little excessive for the warm weather. Dem was more of a throw-on-a-bikini-and-maybe-tie-your-hair-back, if you can find a spare elastic in your handbag kind of swimmer. She preferred to limp across the stones than to bother with special shoes. Once upon a time, this difference would have been enough to make Deb believe that Maisie was probably a bit too fancy for the likes of her, and that she was best avoided. Not so long ago, she had some sharp words to say about the down from Londons and their ridiculous Farrow and Ball perfection. But things were already changing for Deb by this point. She watched Maisie's careful routine for a few days and thought that this was the hallmark of a sophisticated woman. This was the kind of person she needed to associate with from now on. "Go on, girl," she told herself. "Go up and shake her hand." So that's what she did. It was 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning in June, and she had finished her 10 minutes of breaststroke, head upright, and was drying off when Maisie waded inland, caught one foot behind her buttocks to perform a neat quadriceps stretch, and then climbed up the beach to find her belongings. This was Deb's chance. She hid her packet of cigarettes under her sarong, slipped on her flip-flops, and crunched over the stones towards a complete stranger, hoping that this would be yet another step towards her new life. "You're doing the high tides too," she said, and stuck out her hand. "I'm Deb." Maisie had a microfiber towel draped over her shoulders and was in the middle of unpeeling her bathing cap from her short cropped hair. She glanced at Deb, startled. "Oh," she said, and took the hand in an unsteady grip. "Yes, I suppose I am." She ran the towel over her head and around her neck, looking utterly disinterested. "And you are too, I take it." "Yes," said Deb. "Haven't you seen me? I'm here every day." "Oh," said Maisie. "I'm sorry, I haven't really been paying attention." "Don't worry," said Deb. "I'm not really very memorable, or at least I try not to be, if I can help it." She laughed, but it wasn't actually a joke. Maisie wasn't even looking at her anymore and was instead staring out to sea vaguely as if searching for something she'd lost. Or maybe it was just a look of disinterest. Maybe she was trying to be anywhere but in this conversation. "So," said Deb, when it was clear that Maisie wasn't going to pick up the conversation again, "are you a DFL? You look like one to me." "A what?" "You know, a down from London, the enemy of the natives." She laughed again because it was obvious, surely, that this was a joke. No one really cared all that much about the DFLs, except perhaps that bloke on Regent Street who had put up a sign in his garden saying, "DFLs, go home." But nobody took him seriously, and anyway, he'd taken it down after his neighbours complained. I suppose I am," said Maisie, "but I had no idea that it made me anyone's enemy." "Right," said Deb. "Can't we all just live together in peace?"